check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Should you ever set foot outside of the motel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow, now streaming on Paramount Plus, only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Brocast. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network, and I am joined on this fine Friday morning by Tracy Pearson. Tracy, how are you?
Hi, Dave. It is a fine morning, I think. You know, if you're a UCLA fan, I mean, not necessarily this morning after that basketball game, but you know what? Sometimes you just got to wake up and decide to say, you know, what the fuck? Might as well be happy. Yeah.
I'm breathing. This is great.
Yeah. Risky business, right? You ever see that movie?
Yeah. What the fuck, make a move.
Yep.
So there's quite a bit to talk about. Basketball, obviously, hasn't been a good stretch here. And then we're also going to talk about the football staff moves and what we're still anticipating. But we wanted to lead off with basketball, you know, kind of get the bitter pill out of the way. UCLA has lost three straight. They lost a competitive game to Utah, where they played much of a piece with how they played over the winning streak and just were on the wrong side of a last-minute shot. Then they played with absolutely zero energy and focus against USC, lost by six at home. And then that continued with a game that was most similar to the road loss to Utah earlier this year, except UCLA shot a little bit better, so it wasn't quite as bad. But defensively, last night's loss to Washington was, for my money, the worst performance of the Cronin era. Defensively, I think it was worse than Utah. I think it was worse than pretty much anything that first year too. No effort, no focus, and guys not closing out on shooters, collapsing down on drivers, and leaving just wide open shot after wide open shot. Guys not following the scouting report in any way. Just a complete miserable mess. What the heck is happening?
Yeah, well, you pretty much summed it up right there. I mean, the only reason it wasn't a 35-40 point blowout is because Washington isn't as good as Utah.
And they played no defense either. In the last 10 minutes, they didn't play a lick of defense.
Right. UCLA's offense was better against Washington because Washington's defense is not good. It was really... let's just say first, it was a horrible defensive game, but it was kind of bizarre. I don't remember it being like this against Utah. Against Washington, it just seemed like the team, their brains were turned off.
Yeah.
It was bizarre. Washington moves the ball around. There's a little bit of penetration. You know they're kicking it out, and guys just standing and watching. And it wasn't even their body language wasn't like, I'm giving up. Their body language was, oops. I mean, like, they were in a fog collectively. And what they did against how they defended the pick and roll was the worst defense of a pick and roll that I can remember ever having to look at and analyze. It was
at every
so
level,
bad.
So you've got Bona out there hard hedging way too hard, but then you have nobody, literally nobody, trying to bump the roller at all. Nobody's tagging him. Nobody's rotating over. Just complete.
And then Bona hanging out like he's supposed to stay on the ball.
Yeah.
Like he like he's looking back and no one, I mean, Braxton Mia had to be laughing. For a guy who's 7'3", he had more room around him. I mean, there were times like when he started to roll, there was so much time and space. He looked surprised. And Bona didn't ever try to rotate back, which I don't know what that was. I really don't know what that was.
The amount of uncontested dunks this team gives up, even when they're playing defense well, is kind of astonishing. Like in the half court, you don't often see guys at the rim from the opposing team with no one around them, like within 6 feet. But that it seems to happen a lot with this team, especially in the last two games against USC, it was happening too. They just give up a lot of uncontested dunks and layups, and it's, I think some of it is Bona's aggression. I think he believes a little bit too much in his athletic ability to recover from like a very, very high position.
But he didn't even try to recover, Dave. He stood there. I didn't.
There was something tactically wrong there because he was either trying to do something or he was not being told to get back or what. But the thing was he kept being frustrated after those plays and talking to other guys. And I don't know if that's just finger pointing or if there was something with this game plan that other guys were screwing up because it didn't.
I can't think that the staff would want anyone who's 6'4", 6'5", 6'6", to have to rotate on to Braxton Mia. I just can't see that would be a tactical move. And then there was the secondary rotation.
Yeah.
Like you pick him up when he rolls, but then there's someone else under the basket and they were way late.
Nobody was rotating.
Something was not, and it was really bad in the first half. And I thought, they'll get this fixed at halftime. It didn't happen as much, but it happened a couple more. There was one in the second half. I think it was like with 7 minutes left where Braxton Mia had so much time and space.
Yeah.
It was phenomenal. And then
UCLA went on a mini run with Burke and Brandon Williams playing the 4 and the 5, if I'm remembering correctly. And
that was mostly because Braxton Mia was out of the game too.
Well, and also, but as soon as Bona came back in the game, they threw Mia back in there. And because of the way Bona was, whatever they were trying to do, I don't know if it was Bona or if tactically, whatever they were trying to do with Bona, Washington immediately started scoring again. Like it was just, okay. Light switch back on. It was stunning blown coverages. And so that's one. Pick and roll defense was bad, bad, bad. And by itself probably would have resulted in a loss. But then there was there'd be like a little bit of dribble penetration and four guys would collapse to the rim and then immediately kick out. And whoever was on Keon Brooks most of the time was Berke Buyukdunjil, he was also among the guys collapsing, and it would just leave a wide open shooter from three. The amount of wide open three pointers in this game, you would have to be an untalented team to not have scored at least 80. And Washington, not a well coached team, not a good defensive team, but they do have a couple of talented scorers. Even Sevier Wheeler, who's not a shooter, if you give him those kind of looks, he's going to bang a couple.
Keon Brooks, I wrote this and I wasn't really being facetious. That was the most effortless, easiest 32 points ever scored by a human being. Yeah. I don't think he even had to move most of the time. He didn't look like he was sweating. I mean, that was phenomenal how easy those 32 points were.
He had 18 points from the 3-point line, most of which were wide open, and he had 10 of his points from the free throw line. So only 4 of his 32 points came on what you might consider a tougher shot, where he had to go into the lane or do something in the paint or whatever.
And his threes were so wide open,
ridiculous. It was like they had no idea that guy could shoot.
You know, he's the leading scorer in the pack. I just wanted to make sure he's the leading scorer.
Okay, but like he's shooting almost 40% from three too. Like you can never leave him. You have to constantly be on him. This is one where like that one I do believe is firmly a player issue where Berke, he's been bad on defense pretty much all year. And this just feels like focus, zero focus on what the assignment is here, because there couldn't have been a world where Mick Cronin was like, you know what, our defensive game plan is to leave Keon Brooks when there's dribble penetration and to help down low.
Yeah, it was really, seriously, I don't remember this feeling after Utah. To me, that the game got out of hand. Utah got out of hand, and there was general lack of effort. It wasn't like this.
This was much worse.
A team-wide brain fog, which was, are we going to chalk this up to they struggled the beginning of the season. They were kind of trying to put it together, and then they hit that, I wouldn't call it a lull. It was much worse than that. Then they get together and go 8-1, right?
Yeah.
So it might be a situation where it took all of their effort to get them back for that streak. And then the Utah loss, the USC, and now maybe this is all they have. They are a young team. They're not used to sustaining a really high level of energy throughout a season. Plus, you know, we don't know who these guys are. I mean, are they Cronin tough ass kind of guys who keep coming back for more regardless? Right now, you know, UCLA fans are talking about, is it appropriate that Mick Cronin basically, you know, post game or in any other interview is saying this is the tryout for next year? I mean, this is the way he wants to run his program, and this is the way he finds guys. Now, are there a lot of guys who can play for him? No. Are there a lot of guys who think this is like what he's saying is appropriate, or do they want to live with it or play for it? No. Will it find him some dudes? Probably. And that's the only way he can coach. He needs some dogs, and he's trying to find out if any of the guys on this team are going to come back next year, are going to work their ass off and get better and are physically and mentally tough and come back to try to win a national championship next year.
Yeah, I think the
approach can be off-putting, but I know what he's doing, and it's him and it's his style. I kind of get it.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. I don't love it. I think there's better ways to do it, but I get it. If we're trying to diagnose things, I think the Utah game, you know, I wrote it at the end of that recap, but real test of the mental toughness of a young team to lose a tough game, like to again get back to the well of what was happening in November of you played really well and you were just on the wrong end of a thing. How do you respond to that? And I think the first 15 minutes of that USC game where they responded really poorly, this is one where I'm like pure speculative fiction, but they closed that first half 5 minutes really, really well. But then they came out complete dud in the second half. And it makes you wonder what was the message in that locker room? You know, thinking of, again, Mick Cronin emphasizing toughness and all that kind of intensity thing. Was it positive? Hey, you guys closed that first half really well. That's the way you need to play in the second half. Or was it, why did you guys come out looking like that? That's how you looked in practice all week. You're going to lose this game unless you guys pull your heads out. This team, and I agree with you. I think it's 6-1, half a dozen of the other, but this team isn't like mentally tough in the way last year's team was, or the year before that. But I think there's a sense of being very reactive to results on the floor. When this team won 8 of 9, we were talking about the dogs, and we were talking about, oh, they've got some guys. So these guys could make it work. And now they've lost 3 in a row. And Cronin too is talking about, you know, back to the same things he was saying in early January. And that's not to say that's wrong, but what changed? Because for 9 games there, he was talking like, well, we might have a chance to win the Pac-12. Like he was saying, get back to me in, you know, late February and that sort of stuff.
I think it's easy what changed. they can't sustain it. The players aren't sustaining it. So
they didn't sustain it. But that's not that's a different word than can't.
Right. And that changes things in your opinion of the team, is that they didn't sustain it. I mean, your opinion of these players is different now than it was 2 weeks ago.
But given, this is where,
I mean, is your opinion of Barricade different now than it was 2 or 3 weeks ago? No. Mine is.
For him, not really. No.
Mine is
3 games ago.
I still think he has a chance to be a very good player, but I don't know. I don't think he's completely checked in to this. I don't think he's dedicated to making himself a good college basketball player at this point.
I guess my point, and this is like kind of a broader point, and it's Cronin has a saying, you know, you've got to be able to do a lot of different dances. You got to be able to dance a lot of different ways. And that's true for a team, but it's also true for a coach. And this team isn't. It's not the like pure tough ass whatevers of the last few years. It's different. So can you adjust to being a little softer on them, being a little bit like, hey, guys, you know, good way to close out that first half against USC, but we need to sustain this in the second half. Here's what we're going to do, like that sort of stuff. And I didn't like it in early January when he's publicly excoriating the team and talking about guys getting their scholarships pulled. I didn't love that last night. You do that stuff privately. Like that stuff, like if you got to do your roster construction stuff, do it in the offseason. Like
that stuff. I agree with that. Maybe not doing it publicly, but I think it should be done.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. All that stuff might need to happen. I think, you know,
or on a podcast like you and I should do it.
Yes, we should do it.
And that's what we'll do.
We'd be good at it.
Well, we'll do it right now when you're done with this next comment.
Well, no, what I was going to say is at the beginning of January or end of December, whenever we were writing kind of our state of the program things, where it was like, hey, got to kind of buy into these guys and they'll buy into you. And then it looked like that was working for 9 games. And then suddenly it isn't again. It is a different feel at the end of a season than it is the middle point. And I do think UCLA has quite a bit more information about who these guys are and what they do, and also how they work with Mick Cronin. Because I think there's like, you know, we talk about the self-selection narrative and people give us kind of crap for it. Like, oh, this is just excuse making. And like, no, it's not. Like in the ideal world, UCLA would be able to draw from a broad pool of talent. And they've got John Wooden as their head coach, and it's just pure joy and you know, pancakes all the time. But it's not that. Mick Cronin is a tough guy to play for. And the results can be very good if he has the right collection of players, but he's a tough guy to play for. So that self-selection thing is just the reality of it, where guys need to be completely bought in to playing for a tough ass.
Yeah.
And if they're not, it's not going to look very good.
Yeah. I'm glad you said that about the self-selection thing, because What fans want is this ideal scenario. Coach is an excellent coach, great X's and O's. They not only play elite defense, they get up and down and run. They average 88 points a game.
And it's Kumbaya.
Kumbaya, great recruiter. He's a player's coach. All the recruits, he goes after 5 stars, and they all love him. Kumbaya. There, name the coaches in the country that fit all those factors. I mean, they kind of don't exist. And what we're doing with you all here is we're bringing you behind the curtain. So you get all of, you see how the sausage is made. And you're going to see the warts in the sausage. I mean, this is how it is. So instead of wanting the ideal, you have to take the bad with the good. This is not making an excuse for Mick Cronin. I think this roster in this season is on Mick Cronin. And he's pretty much admitted that too, that he made some mistakes in recruiting. I think he'll admit it. I would say right now his coaching, what he's doing to work with the players he has, I don't think it's I don't think I find that much fault with it, but he made the mistake of putting this team together and he's trying to coach them as well as he can. So I don't find that much fault with his coaching of them, but I do, and he will too, find fault with the team he put together. And I believe he will learn lessons from this.
He's got to know his guys better than this. And that's the thing, is put all of it together. The self-selection, Mick Cronin being a tough ass, and him having to coach a certain way. Like, this is the coach he is. So let's all deal with the realities of the situation. Well, given all of those realities, he cannot recruit unknowns. And that's not to say that, like, the international players were complete unknowns. They did evaluate them. They did see them. But they didn't see them the way you see domestic prospects. They didn't watch that number of games in person. They didn't do that level of evaluation that goes into recruiting domestically.
And just on that point,
aren't that many opportunities.
Yeah, on that point too, the bigger mistake was not more than just the evaluation of the players, was the conclusion that you could bring in 7 freshmen and 8 new players and there could be a relatively seamless transition to playing for Mick Cronin. You can't do that. It's tough to play for Mick. You need a group of veterans. When a freshman comes in and he hits the wall, right? And he hits, and you're an international, you're a foreign player, and you come in, you're hitting a huge wall because you're acclimating to living in a whole new country, other language, going to school. So even if you're an American recruit and you come in, you're hitting a wall playing for Mick Cronin. It's usually 3 guys, 4.
Yeah.
You've got a whole team worth of veterans that, you know, Jaime Jaquez, Tiger Campbell coming up to you and go, hey man, just buy in. It's going to work. Just trust this. Trust the process. They don't have guys doing that. This is a collective group of kids who are all going, what the hell is going on here? That's the bigger issue.
Yeah.
Some of the players that we're seeing, some of the play that we're getting from some of these guys, they don't have that mentoring of veterans that you need in a Mick Cronin program. As I said, I think he will learn. I think he's going to go huge into the transfer portal. And what he will be looking for are just, let's just say, 2 veteran guys. There might be more talented guys out there in the transfer portal, but 2 tough asses that will be able to play for him, that will be able to sustain a whole season, that will be able to pull along all the younger guys, lead and be tough leaders for Mick Cronin, guys that he can trust, that he can put out on the court and are gonna play their asses off and sustain effort. I think that's what he'll be looking for. I'm segueing this into a talk about the roster. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine.
Did you want to add more?
Well, I was just going to say, when we were talking midseason about how it wouldn't be much different bringing in 8 new guys, no matter if they were freshmen or transfers at that point, because there's an adjustment period. But I think you can look at the play of Lazar Stefanovic over the last 2 months to see what the value would have been in bringing in more transfers, because once he got with the program, he already has the kind of baseline. I've been in college basketball. I know what the rhythms of a season are like. And so he's not hitting a wall. He had like 1 bad shooting stretch for a couple of games, but then he was pretty good last night again. If you had more of those guys, you'd probably have a season that looked a little bit more like, again, 2019, 2020, instead of what this one is turning into, which is, you know, he analogized it to his Murray State second year, I think, in either this week or last week, in his press conference. It looks like a complete rebuild and not, you know, something that's going to make any kind of run now.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Host Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen, download, and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.
Hello, everyone. It's Mike Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.
Anyway, let's transition to roster construction.
Yeah, so we can talk about it. Maybe we take issue with Mick Cronin talking about it publicly, but you and I certainly can do it. Yeah. I think it is a tryout. I think there are things that you want to see from a player, and a lot of it is just not effort, but it's like closing off the season, finishing the season with effort and focus, and who's prepared to do that. So right now, this is another part of the test where you're evaluating these guys, and we're seeing it too. It starts with a Dembona. Now, I'm having discussions with some people, friends of mine, Bruin fans, and they're texting me during the game, and he said, so do we want a Dembona to come back? And after a lot of analysis, I believe, yes, you do. Because the point we were making, playing for Mick Cronin is not necessarily easy, but if you can do it, he will optimize and get the most out of you. I would rather have third year a Dembona who's been in the system, in Mick Cronin's system for 2 years, then roll the dice with another post player at this point. Unless, of course, it's like one of the most amazing post players in the country. But let's say maybe a little bit better skill wise than a Dembona, I'll still take a Dembona.
Yeah.
Is his NIL value kind of dipping now? Probably. Will he be a little bit more affordable? Probably for UCLA to retain. Probably. You'd have to think his NBA draft stock is kind of plummeting too. So in a way, it's kind of all good. So starting with the Dembona, I think, you know, you retain him and you bring him back, even though the last few games have been very frustrating watching him. I mean, he had a double-double last night, and that was not a good game that he played.
Yeah. I would say Bona, you take him back over pretty much any other post. Again, like what you said, maybe if there's like a surefire second-year, third-year NBA guy, but I don't think those guys exist or are going in the portal. It's Bona. You don't have to go too far back into the history to find Bona being an integral part of a very good team. Last year, his injury more or less foreclosed the opportunity for that team to win a national championship because he was playing like one of the best players on the team towards the end of that stretch. If he's the part of what's going on with a Dem, from my perspective, is he is trying to make up for everyone and trying to win basketball games on single plays. His problem is not effort. His problem may be focus at times. His problem may be, you know, adhering to the game plan last night. Again, I don't know the circumstances of what was happening there. He was pointing a lot of fingers, and the fact that nobody was even bumping the roll man makes me think that there were some major breakdowns happening. But Adem brings effort, brings toughness. And last year, when he was a piece of a lot of different, a piece of a very good team, he was great to have. And I think next year, maybe he's one of the primary pieces, but he needs another couple of guys around him who are going to shoulder some of the load. And Dylan Andrews maybe becomes that guy, but it's not consistent yet. And Lazar Stefanovic, I think in an ideal world, is probably your really, really tough sixth guy, where he's not having to shoulder a huge amount of the scoring load, because I think that gets in his head a little bit. It's not his ideal way of playing.
Yeah. Yeah. Agree with all. You know, in my discussions with my friends, the discussion is, I mean, you usually assume that every year someone gets better. Adem Bone has gotten better since his freshman year. I think he played better this year. There were, it's a lot, like you said, to step into a major role. There are going to be spotlights on different parts of your game, but I think he's a better player now than he was last year. The question is, does he continue to get better? What's his ceiling? Does he have natural limitations on that ceiling? I think he, even if his ceiling isn't huge, isn't really high, he will still get better. So I think you retain Adem Bona. I don't think that should be a question. And then after that, I know before last night's game, in the last two, because the last two games, people started questioning Dylan Andrews again, after he went on a great tear. He was named Pac-12 player of the week when he averaged 21 points a game. I know he played really well in a couple of those games. And last night, when your defense is breaking down around you, the team is breaking down. They're arguing over tactically who should do what. I mean, not only did he play a really superb offensive game, he did play a pretty decent defensive game too.
He was back.
I mean, to do that, it's easy to do that when your team's rolling and you're blowing someone out by 18. But when you're getting blown yourself, to play a game like this and you keep it together.
And that, it's not easy to do that on Sevier Wheeler. Like, that's
wow. That Sevier Wheeler is so damn fast.
Yeah.
It's really bizarre. And to be able, he kept him to 11 points. I mean, if he hadn't thrown in that three was crazy.
That was awesome.
That really was awesome. I think Dylan Andrews is an integral part of this team going forward. I think it's obvious to say he can get better. He can get more consistent. But there aren't people compare him to Tiger Campbell, and I get it. Tiger Campbell as a sophomore was getting better. Dylan Andrews is a better sophomore, as better as a sophomore than Tiger Campbell was. Because I'm looking at both. Tiger Campbell was never a lockdown defender. They had a scheme around Tiger Campbell's defense. So I think Dylan Andrews, no brainer to keep, unless one of your dogs is a lead guard who is, I mean, a ridiculously good player and calls you up and says, I want to come to UCLA and I don't want that much NIL money, then you might consider taking him and putting the ball in his hand and hoping Dylan Andrews stays, but risking that he wouldn't.
Yeah, I think the big thing with Andrews, this is the difference between him and Tiger, is Tiger was always tougher than hell. And I think Dylan Andrews has some of that, but I do think there's a confidence problem that keeps cropping up with him. You'll see it in game, like even last night, he played really, really well, but there was still an upside to his performance that's untapped, because there was one play in the second half where he starts doing speed dribbles out over the like at the top of the 3-point line, and just takes his guy, like just purely off the dribble, bounces around him, pulls up from basically the free throw line and buries the jumper. And it's like, he could do that every single play with his quickness. Like, he can, if he's manned up and there is no help coming, he can take his guy off the dribble every single time if he wants to. And he's got to want to. He's got to understand, I can do that. I need to have the athletic arrogance to do it, because once you do that, everything breaks down. I mean, a big part of why the offense looked better in the second half against Washington was Washington not playing any defense. But a lot of it was also Dylan Andrews finally putting the whole team on his shoulders and saying, hey, I'm going to do this. I want to see more of that, but I agree with you. I mean, I think people, again, you get, and I think this is the danger that I'm wanting to caution against for our friend Mick. don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, because you've done a lot of development work on Dylan Andrews this year, and you're starting to realize some of the benefits of that. And yes, he has games where it looks off, where he's not playing particularly well. And if he's shooting really poorly, sometimes that infects other aspects of his game. But over the last like month and a half, he's shown so much from a defensive standpoint. And then with that ability to break guys down and hit those mid-range jumpers, that you don't want to lose that. And you don't want to lose that because you're recruiting over him. Maybe if somebody wants to call and do the whole thing, but even then, I would caution against somebody who's been in the system and who understands exactly what's going to be asked, because even with a veteran, there's going to be an adjustment.
Yeah. It's funny because you really hit on something. There's so much more upside with him.
Yeah.
He's not asserting himself.
No, he's got freakish quickness and his
freakish. There was one explosion of the basket last night where he put it in another gear and got to the basket so quickly, no one could rotate back to even come close to blocking his shot.
And he's got a great handle. I mean, it's gotten so much better in the last year. Don't lose that.
As a sophomore from three, he is out shooting Tiger Campbell.
Yeah.
He's shooting 28, 29. Tiger Campbell shot 25. So yeah, that whole bathwater thing. Coaches, and I'm not going to say this about this staff, but I know in general, coaches are highly reactionary. They have a guy who's playing well for a few games, they love him. Guy who doesn't play well for a couple of more games, they go, can't wait for him to leave. I mean, so yeah. You're right. I think, unless one of the most an elite point guard calls him up and says, I want to come, and it's not going to, and I don't want $1 million or not. Because remember, let's say you get an elite point guard and he wants to come, but he wants $1 million in mm-hmm. NIL. That wipes out so many more slots in your roster. Paying someone $250,000 to $300,000 is a lot for NIL. That's on the higher end at this point right now in the market. It's not a lot, but it's on the higher end. If you pay someone $1 million, you are probably getting you are conservatively taking away two starters, two other starters to get this one guy. That's the market right now. $1 million should get you three starters, at least two. So I just would caution against looking for a point guard. I know people think he's not a natural point guard. He's getting better at passing the ball. It's also kind of a different offense. It's a different game. Like if you're comparing him to Tiger Campbell than it was just a few years ago. Okay. So we've done that. The third and fourth guy are Lazar Stefanovic and Sebastian Mack. I think Lazar Stefanovic is a really highly valuable guy for this team for next season. He's proven it over the course of this season that he is one of those tough guys. He is also the coach on the court. He's the one that's delivering the coach's message, plays his ass off. Ideally, like you said, sixth man, first off the bench. But I think he's a guy you need to retain. He's been playing really well for at least a month.
Yep.
Right. Defense can be a little lacking when he goes up against a pretty quick guy. You can see his defensive limitations, but absolutely. Sebastian Mack is interesting.
Yes.
I think Sebastian Mack will be a really good college player, but
big butt.
Well, I mean, so I think Sebastian Mack, take out the NIL factor. And if you're just evaluating for upside of as a college basketball player, you absolutely retain him. What could kill it is if Sebastian Mack comes back and asks for some ungodly amount of NIL. Where, like I said, he wants enough NIL to where it would get you another starter level player. Then I think you can start questioning it. I don't know that he would do that, but this is what almost every single player does.
Yeah.
So I would assume he'll be asking for some NIL.
My problem is yes, that also on floor, there was a brief uptick during the winning streak where his defense was better. But I would say of the guys on this team, it's probably him and Burke who just do not seem like they're getting it defensively and haven't really ever it hasn't really clicked at any point for them. And that's the thing where you just don't know. Is it going to click? And do his offensive contributions make up for that? And that's, you know, I don't know. I don't know what the vibe is when this is, I mean, just full disclosure, I was kind of anti Johnny Juzang, and then he led them to a Final Four. So I've got my little biases against kind of volume shooting and you know, individual play on offense. But I don't know what effect that has on the rest of the team when he's just, okay, I'm going to go and, you know, drive into three guys right now and try to throw up a wild shot. When it goes in, I'm sure it feels nice. When it's part of a big win, I'm sure it feels nice. But when it's happening in the middle of a game, that's not those things. I just, that's the part where I don't know. I don't know if he's, this is where I go into like fit stuff, because I think he is a tough guy. I think he's got that aspect, but I don't know if he's a fit, like from a, what, how do you want a team to look? How does this thing function? If one guy's out there doing that stuff, then I worry about collective team buy-in.
Yeah. I think you got to think longer term. Like you said earlier, everyone just gets so caught up in the most immediate results that you're seeing.
Yeah.
Just look at how people develop. Is anyone, has there, name a UCLA player that was the same as a junior than he was as a freshman. Very, very rarely is there no development, or just not development, but maturation. Sebastian Mack checks a lot of the boxes of what you want on your team. He's kind of immature, focused defensively, decision-making offensively. He's a scorer, though. He's leading the team in scoring. He is a scorer. He does play hard. He is tough. These are the kind of things that when you're going to develop someone, and Cronin does need some guys to still develop, he has the traits that I think Cronin wants to develop. I think he will grow, mature, make better decisions. I mean, Jules Bernard as a freshman was a mess, and he learned and he matured. There are more instances where players mature and get better. I think you keep him unless there's some outrageous NIL demand, because we did posts and we did point guards, and those are hard to find. Off guards and wings, easy to find. You can go into the transfer portal. I mean, I'm telling you, Sebastian Mack, I'm saying I think you have some tremendous upside, but just you are replaceable. They could go into the transfer portal and find someone who would be as good as Sebastian Mack next year. Would love to keep you because you know how to play under, you know what you're getting with Mick Cronin. There are a lot of advantages, but do not value your NIL.
Yeah.
Because right, you can go, you can get any wings.
We should rapid fire the rest, because we got to get to football. So okay. I'm going to go fire. Through them.
Because those were the four.
Yeah.
First off, headline. I can rapid fire almost everyone. Just about all the other ones. Yeah. If you want to stay, you want to stay. If not, okay.
I'll throw a little disagreement out, where I think you keep both of the Williamses. And I don't think there's going to be high demand for them, so I don't think you need to look. Yeah, if there's an NIL demand,
also their delusion.
Yeah, if there's any kind of delusion, then sure. But both of those guys, you know, the upside is considerable with Devin Williams, and then with Brandon Williams, clearly Cronin already likes his toughness. Clearly, he already has that aspect of it. So turning them into players does not seem. That seems like one of the bigger slam dunks in Cronin's developmental history at UCLA, that those guys will turn out to be players. So keep them because you need developmental guys at the four anyway.
Brandon Williams stays unless Rick Pitino comes in and offers him $500,000 to play back home.
Right.
Devin Williams, yeah. I think, take or leave.
Yeah.
If he wants to stay, great.
And then I like what I've seen out of Adai Mara the last, I don't know, month. So keeping him because the upside is off the charts. If he gets it all together.
Completely agree. And just to throw this in from what I've, like we've told you, Adai Mara, we've heard, wants to return. Here's a little bit of breaking news that the trend right now is that Berke Bayuktunsil wants to return.
Yeah.
Kind of not playing like it right now, but he wants to return. But like Will McClendon, I like him. I do. I think he's kind of a mid-major plus player. He's playing at not his level.
And a bench.
End of the bench if he wants to stay, but dang, no NIL there. I mean, you need to get some players with your NIL.
Yeah.
Jan Vide, Alon Fibloy, from what I know and just watching, they would be the biggest candidates to leave. Jan Vide is interesting because was hitting a wall early. Then he started to get some playing time, and it seemed like he started to play within the concept, feeding the post. The last few times he's been in, it just looks like he's hunting his floater mid-range.
I would say last night, offensively, he played better. He was once again back within the concept, but defensively, he was a disaster.
Really? You thought that? I didn't think that at all. I thought he was hunting a shot.
He was trying hard to get the ball into the post. His first possession, he entry feed. But the previous two stints, the previous couple of games where he got in, it was exactly what you said. Just, I'm going to go get mine. And it was just nothing else.
So you return the key guys. You go out and get two dogs, that's probably a scoring wing, right? A good shooting scoring wing. And then anyone else, probably a face up four, you know, that's played, that's tough, that knows what it is to be a good college player. And then whoever wants to stay stays.
Yeah.
And from what I'm hearing, they're going to have some NIL money.
Yeah.
So well, Mick is going to have the tools he needs to get what he wants more than likely with NIL.
Yeah, I think that's where I'm kind of landing. Retain seven or eight guys from this roster and then shop. And I think you're going to be in a pretty good shape going into next year. Okay, we should transition to football.
Okay, Dave.
That's my segue. You liked it?
Sure.
Yeah, there was no segue.
When you say transition, yeah, it works.
Yeah, sure. transition. Okay, so... there haven't been any coaching announcements, which is interesting, but Eric Bieniemy is very likely to be announced soon as UCLA's offensive coordinator. We reported it last week, and it's now looking like he will be the offensive coordinator next year. He's the former running back from Colorado, who was an assistant under Carl Durrell in the opening years of Carl Durrell's time at UCLA. So Bieniemy coming in as the offensive coordinator, we haven't talked since 2 weeks ago when this was just a possibility. What's your take on this as an offensive coordinator?
You know, I think there's upside and downside. I think Bieniemy has in his career has done enough where you would think he should be able to bring a good scheme. He's not experienced. He has a good playbook. Has to have a good playbook. Downside is we've always seen it. If you have not recently been coached in college and been successful, there's usually some kind of issue with you then coaching again or coaching for the first time in college. So there's that. I'm always skeptical of a pro coach coming to the college ranks And just there's so many things to deal with. There's recruiting. There's now NIL. There's donors. There's it's a lot. You just don't coach anymore. So I think that's a lot. I don't know. I used to know Eric. We were friends. I don't know how he will do making that transition. I think it's human to, after being in the NFL for so long, to struggle to go back to college. There have been things in his past, in his file. I don't know what to make of those. Overall, I'm saying the OC hire could have been a lot worse. Could it have been a lot better? Other guys they would have taken, I probably would have had question marks too. There was no one that I just went flat out, fantastic, amazing, slam dunk.
This is one. So I'm ambivalent. I shared this last week. I'm basically same thoughts as you, kind of mixed minds. What I'll say is the NFL experience, if you are pro Eric Bieniemy, has to be the reason you are pro Eric Bieniemy, because his Colorado offenses in 2011 and 2012 were bad. And yes, that was the John Embry teams, and yes, they weren't good in a lot of different ways, but those offenses were bad too. And then he went to the Chiefs, spent a long time with the Chiefs, spent a long time with Andy Reid, spent a long time coaching Pat Mahomes. All of that has to be the reason that you're hiring him, and has to be something that you think is going to translate at UCLA from an on-field perspective. Because the college stuff is not something that's not good. But the pro stuff has to be the reason that you think this might be good. Now, recruiting is probably the reason I am most kind of like, yeah, okay, this could work out. I mean, he got Maurice Jones-Drew. And you know, he once had that kind of energy to do that, and the you know, kind of aggressive mindset to be a good recruiter. If that translates now, you know, 10 years, 12 years since he was last a college coach, then you can see some upside with this hire. But the hope has to be that he really, really, really learned something from Andy Reid, like really picked up some things and is ready to go as a play caller and as an offensive game plan designer. And we're just going to have to sweep the Commanders' stint under the rug because it wasn't very good either. But I don't follow enough NFL stuff to say that that was Bieniemy's fault, or the fact that they had something called a Sam Howell as their quarterback. I don't know, and I'm not going to speculate about that. It's outside my purview, but it wasn't good. So basing a lot off of his stint with the Chiefs from an on-field perspective, and he's got some people saying some nice things about him. Andy Reid saying nice things about him. Mahomes saying nice things about him.
But what you would expect.
Yeah, I mean, Mike Shanahan said nice things about Carl Durrell.
Yeah.
So
yeah. So that's that. I have heard. I'm not prepared to say. I don't have enough reliable information to absolutely corroborate. But I've heard that the new offensive coordinator will have an opinion on the OL coach and the wide receiver coach. Right now, it looks like Tim Drebno is going to be retained at this point, but I'm just saying there is a slight door ajar there. We've seen what's happening. We've reported on the wide receiver, the Jerry Neuheisel, could be transitioned to tight end coach. That might be because the offensive coordinator wants his guy. That's generally kind of what you do. You want a wide receiver. You want your own wide receiver and your own OL coach.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where that stands. Running backs coach, we have to admit, has not been mentioned. Really?
Have to assume the enemy's going to handle it.
You'd have to assume someone. You're going to have to double up here if you're going to get under the 10 on-field coaching limitation.
Yeah.
Billy Fessler, who's the quarterback coach presently that Chip Kelly hired in January, we have heard basically he's been told that there would be a spot for him in the program. We just don't know what that might be, because we have heard that Ted White, the former Texan quarterbacks coach, could likely be the quarterback coach. So that's all the offense, offensive staff. Defensively, we're hearing that Akaika Molloy will be retained. I heard that Brian Norwood, the safeties coach, the intention was it was 50-50 with him, whether he was going to be retained or not. And he and Deshaun kind of met, and Norwood will be retained. Cody Woodfield, I reported a couple of weeks ago that he was being courted by other programs. I haven't heard anything since. I don't know if he still is or he's not. I'm just saying he's still there. Akaika Molloy, like we said, is defensive coordinator. Will he help with the line at practice, or will he just be defensive coordinator? Tony Washington, when was he hired, Dave? December? As defensive line coach. They need to hire a linebackers coach. We have heard that former UCLA linebackers coach Scott White could be the serious consideration for that slot. That's kind of where it stands right now. We are just about a month out from spring practice. So there's a lot to do. You got to hire a staff. You need to put together, a playbook. You need to then put together a plan of how you're installing your playbook. I hear this on the message board a lot. They're hoping that a lot of the offense is retained from last season, so there's an easy transition. I don't think there's ever, in my experience, a longtime offensive coordinator, an experienced coordinator, comes in to a situation and he doesn't immediately install his own scheme. Now, there are some similarities because it's all football, right? But Eric Bieniemy is going to put in his own scheme. Let's just assume that.
Also, the offense wasn't good last year. I think people are conflating 2023 and 2022, but it wasn't good. So
yeah, I think they're thinking continuity in the scheme is really highly important. But I'm saying they got to bring the coach. We've heard reports that he was spotted running around the track at Drake Stadium. He's there. He's creating his playbook. It's going to be installed. That's what you do every spring anyway, is install your playbook. He's going to install his playbook. Overall, Dave, I think the thing that we have to watch, everyone's excited about this right now. UCLA fans are trying to get behind it. There are either ones that are saying, yeah, I want to be positive. Then you have the other ones who are cranks, who are probably holding off on their crankisms just to try to give it some time. What we're here to do, Dave, is not really be either, but just give you a dose of reality and balance. What we have to look for in hiring the staff, I think, red flags to watch for is just, in my opinion, cronyism never works in hiring. And then whether, and we've been talking about this for head coaches and now assistant coaches, if the hire is done for hype, where you can get behind it and hype it. Eric Bieniemy, luckily, has some coaching chops, but you got to know a lot of this was because the perception is that he'd bring a big name also to the program. So watch for those two things. And when all of that is done, when the rubber hits the road, if the work is being done, if they're really working hard, if they're working in the best test, are they recruiting? Are all these guys they've offered, are they now recruiting them hard? Are they really aggressively calling them, getting after them, contacting them? That's where it is. Coaches can work hard at coaching a lot. Where you see if they're really doing their job fully is if they're recruiting hard. So let's watch for that. We could all be very happy that it turns out to be true that they're recruiting hard, and that's an indication that they're coaching hard, but that's something to watch for.
Let me say this. That needs to improve. based on these first couple of weeks. I'll put it baldly for everyone. You should, like, at the beginning of a tenure where the coaches are recruiting especially hard, you should see Biggins posting on the board, Huffman posting on the board, Blair posting on the board. Hey, talk to this guy. He says UCLA is on him really, really hard now, and they're going crazy. You're seeing offers, but you're not seeing that yet. And that needs to happen. And I'm not going to draw any conclusions until probably when did we start saying, hey, there's some red flags with Chip Kelly? June, I think it was, heading into camp season.
Yeah, no. The red flags in recruiting, we kind of were semi bought into his approach,
the strategy. And then guys weren't getting called in June.
Yeah.
So
the question wasn't with the strategy, which eventually was, it was with the effort.
Yes. So that's what we're going to be looking for. And I think right now, what I would say is based on the first, it's almost nearly a month now, based on the first 3 weeks, that needs to improve. And hopefully it will once this staff gets settled, but that's already kind of a clear cut area of improvement.
And related to that is how much the staff, Deshaun Foster, is working to generate NIL. The Men of Westwood Twitter page is now doing booms. So be watching. If there are a lot of booms, things are happening. And also taking into consideration, some of those booms are basketball, but that's kind of an indication too. Are they putting in the work? Is Deshaun Foster putting in the work to generate NIL money? That's big too, because that's very much related to effort in recruiting now these days. So yeah, the hype is good, you know, the new spring game, that's all great. Putting Bruin Walk back in, all of that is great stuff, but for it to really translate into results, be watching for how this staff is recruiting.
What did we say going into the hiring process? The next 12 months of this job, all about recruiting and fundraising. Results on the field, not going to be good this year. Recruiting and fundraising. And so that's what we're assessing. That's what we're going to be judging over the next several months. All right. That's it. We're done.
Okay.
All right. For Tracy Pearson, I'm David Woods, Bruin Report Online. We'll talk to you again next time.
We'll see you.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.